we think about His grace, we sure have a lot to be thankful for this morning. We're going to be in Psalms 42. But before we get there, I want to ask you a question. Have you ever watched a movie or a TV show that played with your emotions? You ever watched a show that played with your emotions, and it played with your emotions usually at the end of the show when it previews what's going to come the next show, so you just have to watch it again? One of my favorite shows is Shark Tank. Anybody like the show Shark Tank? I love Shark Tank. It's a show where different entrepreneurs, they stand before 6 to 7 potential investors and attempt to get one of them to invest in their company. Now, one of the sharks, as they call it, his name is Kevin O'Leary. How many of you guys know I'm talking about when I say Kevin O'Leary? Kevin O'Leary is an absolute jerk. So Kevin O'Leary, you'll have an entrepreneur who's just invested their life savings into a company. They've given everything they have. They've sacrificed. They've done it all. And they stand before the investors, the sharks. And Kevin O'Leary says, "Your item's a piece of trash. Your product is worthless." And I'm sitting there thinking, Kevin, how can you say that to that person? They have a family. They're a nice person. How could you say that? And then logic slowly creeps into my mind and I think, okay, this is a TV show. Every TV show has to have somebody that you don't like. Every TV show has to have somebody. They have to have the Simon Cowell. You know, he's the Simon Cowell of Shark Tank. Every TV show has to have it. And Kevin O'Leary's actually probably maybe a nice guy in real life. But that doesn't change the fact that I don't like him. The entertainment industry does an incredible job at creating emotional content. And we enjoy media with emotional content because we are emotional people. Now, some of you would say, I'm not very emotional. But then your favorite sports team loses. And when your favorite sports team loses, you lose it. We're going to watch a video about somebody that probably wouldn't classify themselves as emotional. But in 2011, I don't mean to bring up any past wounds or anything, in the NFC Championship game, the 49ers lost to the New York Giants on an end of the game field goal. And let's see his response.
Thanks for the step.
Leon.
Are you kidding me?
It's all right, Leon.
This was our year.
That's all right.
This was our year. This isn't how it's supposed to happen.
Wait.
This wasn't how it's supposed to happen. Stop it. No.
Leon.
How many of you know somebody like that? How many are honest enough to say that that's me? Anybody? Okay, all right. If you talk to Gina, she probably would say that's a little bit of me. But I think if we're honest, we would all say that we have emotions. And what do we do when our emotions betray us? What do we do when our emotions take us to an unhealthy place or are leading us to make an unhealthy decision? In the book of Psalms, every emotion you can possibly feel, you can find in there. Thankfulness, happiness, love, sadness, joy, anger. It's all in there. When you get to Psalms 42, you don't find pleasant emotions. You don't find happiness or love or thanksgiving. In fact, you find the opposite. You find somebody sharing their unfiltered emotions. It's raw. It's real. Their emotions are up. Their emotions are down. And in Psalms 42, it resonates a lot. This guy talks about a time where he has this inner turmoil that we all face at times if we're honest. Now, I want us to see it this morning on what do we do when our emotions betray us? How do we handle our emotions? In Psalms 42, verse number 1, I think we can get it up on the screen. Is this working? Is that me or is that you? That's me. Okay, cool. Psalms 42, verse number 1, it says, as the hart panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee, O God, as the deer pants after the water brooks. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? Sounds very spiritual, doesn't it? It's like, yeah, that should be in the Bible. It's very spiritual. He sounds like he's very stable. He's fine emotionally. He loves God. He's seeking God. But verse number 3 takes a little bit of a turn. My tears have been my meat day and night. He's not eating. He's not sleeping. While they continually say unto me, where is thy God? His problems have consumed him. His circumstances are weighing on him. His emotions have betrayed him to a point where he's doubting his faith. Where? This guy's a Christian. He's a follower of Jehovah God. He says, where is my God? This guy, his emotions are telling him to doubt his faith. Verse number 4. When I remember these things, I pour out my soul in me, for I had gone with the multitude. I went with them to the house of God with the voice of joy and praise, with the multitude that kept holy day. He's reminiscing back to the times where he would have corporate worship, where he would be in Jerusalem. He's far away from home. He's far away from where he should be. And because he's far away from the temple, from what we would call the church, it's affecting him. It's hurting him. And he looks at his internal issues, and he emotionally is honest enough to say, I am not where I should be. Verse number 5. This is what he does. He asks a question. He says, why art thou cast down, O my soul? And why art thou disquieted in me? He's asking his heart a question. He's looking within himself. He's doing self-examination at a very, very profound level. Now, this really stands out to me because he basically asks himself, why am I feeling this way? Why am I feeling the emotions that I'm feeling? Now, in today's culture, this is really important. Because if we want to be healthy on the inside, we're going to have to question and we're going to have to ask ourselves what's going on the inside. We have to question sometimes our feelings. We have to question sometimes our emotions. Now, that seems so simple. But in the day and age we live in, feelings are the ultimate foundation for truth and identity. Feelings are the language of the day. And if you question somebody's feelings and you say, I don't know about that, that's a cardinal sin. You don't question somebody's feelings. You don't question somebody's emotions. A writer did some scientific research back in 2008 and he came to this conclusion. This is his conclusion. It's very encouraging this morning. Human beings are irrational. So he said, human beings are irrational. I think if we're honest, that's not any surprise to us. And he goes on to write this. He says, we make definitive moral decisions impulsively and irrationally. And then they spend an inordinate amount of time defending those impulsive, irrational decisions. We make definitive moral decisions impulsively and irrationally. And then they spend an inordinate amount of time defending those impulsive and irrational decisions. How many of you got that? You got that? Yeah. And I think if we're honest, we've all done that before. We make decisions based on feelings and we call them facts. We make decisions based on feelings and we call them facts. Why do we do that? Because they feel true. Don't they? Why do we make an emotional decision that is based on feelings, and we say, no, that's real, because it feels true. And with this logic, what it says is, this is really how I feel, so whatever belief or idea whatever beliefs or feelings are attached to this must also be true. It feels true to me, so this is my truth. And don't say it's not true, because that would dent the validity and authority of my feelings. We all do this at times. Now, if this philosophy produced lasting joy and hope and meaning, I would say, let's do it. But go with me for a second. Could you imagine if the entire world, on the count of three, did whatever they felt like doing? We count it to three, and whatever 7 billion people there are in the world, they did whatever they wanted. Can you imagine what this world would be like? You think zombies are bad? It would be crazy. You know what it'd be like? It would be like shopping on Black Friday. Like, I know some of you courageous people are going to do this week. Some of you guys have already skipped Thanksgiving. You're not even thinking about Thanksgiving. You're thinking about Black Friday. That's what it would be like. It would be mayhem, mayhem. Now, I'm not saying to live an emotionless life, because that would be impossible and that would be very boring. And nor am I saying that your emotions can't color or shape your decisions either, because I think they should. But in my lifetime, I've never met somebody that says, my general philosophy for life is do what I feel like doing, and it's produced happiness, joy, and meaning. In fact, ironically, I found the opposite. This is what I'm trying to get to. I'm trying to get to this. Emotions make great companions, but terrible leaders. Emotions make great companions, but terrible leaders. And this is what the psalmist is finding out in Psalms 42, because he's at an emotional place in his life. He's at a place where things are difficult. He's at a place where he's feeling a certain way, and he's going to have to disconnect himself from reality, disconnect himself and evaluate those emotions to get to a place of health. Notice the rest of the verse in verse number 5. His response is, hope thou in God, for I shall yet praise him for the help of his countenance. In chapter 42 of Psalms, he asked 9 questions in 11 verses. And his response after asking questions, his response after searching, is to hope in God. The writer's lost. He's confused. He's hopeless. So he looks at his options, and these are his options. Either life is meaningless, there's no point to life, or there is a God and he's the only hope that I have. And when you look at the amount of pain and suffering and terrible things that are happening in this world, if you'll be honest, that's the only two answers. Either life is meaningless and there's no point to this whole thing, or our only hope is God. Those are really the only two conclusions you can come to. Now, if you lean into the secular perspective, the secular point of view that life is meaningless, you come to a place where you say, all this is an accident. There's no purpose. There is zero significance beyond the present. There is no right and wrong, and one day you'll simply cease to exist. That's not very encouraging. In fact, that will take you to one place. Discouragement, depression, and that's the secular perspective. But what if there really is a God? What if there's a God that loves you? What if there's a God that's for you? What if there's a God that has a plan and a purpose for your life? There's an architect for you. God the Father sent his Son, Jesus, that God that created us with purpose, that the scriptures teach, that we believe, that God created all of us with meaning, and he sent his Son Jesus so we can have a relationship with him. In fact, Christianity, believe it or not, it's not a religion. Christianity is a relationship that we have with the loving Heavenly Father. And the secular viewpoint, if you'll be intellectually honest with yourself, it's very hopeless. Because it takes you to a place that says, I have no purpose. But if there's a God in heaven that loves you, there is ultimate purpose and there's ultimate meaning. And God does it, and God loves everybody unconditionally. Now, when our emotions betray us, like they often do, we usually respond in one of two ways. And usually both of these are unhealthy. Now, there's a third option we're going to talk about in a minute. But when our emotions betray us, we usually respond in one of two ways. The first response is we try hard and we fail. When you're feeling down, when you're feeling sad, when you're in a place emotionally where you don't want to be, you try to fix it. You try to change whatever's messing with your happiness. Try to change the circumstances. You try to discover what can I do or who can I talk to or where can I go. You try to fix the problem, only to discover that ultimately you can't. You try and you fail. And you resign yourself to the fact that I guess this is how my life is going to be. And maybe you take up a hobby, or maybe you live for the weekend, or maybe you live for your vacation or whatever, and you live for the moments of happiness that punctuate an otherwise frustrating existence. When our emotions betray us, we try hard and fail sometimes. Our second response is this, and there's a better one we're going to talk about in a minute, is you try hard and succeed. So something's messing with your happiness. Emotionally, you're just not where you should be. And you think, if I can just get this, or I can have this, or whatever we deem as will change our emotions, we try to get it, we succeed at it, and then we're still empty. So we get the job, we get the relationship, we get the diploma, we get the car, the house, whatever. We finally retire after years and years of working, only to find out shortly that we still don't feel much better. And we've been working so hard to get satisfaction, and now we have it, and the satisfaction isn't there, and we're like, we hit rock bottom. And it's like, where do we go? It reminds me of Psalms 3, where King David, his oldest son, is trying to kill him. His oldest son has put together a group of rebels, and they're going to take the throne, and King David's going to lose his kingdom, and he's obviously lost the loyalty of his son. Can you imagine that? You're a king. That sounds pretty good, right? Imagine that you're a king. Isn't that great? Have whatever you want. Do whatever you want. You're a king. And all of a sudden, you hear that your oldest son, who's been loyal to you up to this point, recalibrated. And things get back into alignment. And sometimes the reason why I'm feeling a certain way or whatever isn't because I'm sinning or I'm doing bad. It's just because my life is too crazy and I haven't said no to enough things. And it's in that time of margin that it seems like things recalibrate. Question your emotions. Be honest. Andy Stanley says self-deception is easy when emotions run high. Self-deception is easy when emotions run high. When emotions are going 60 miles an hour and you're in the middle of a crazy season of life and you can feel a certain way that's totally disconnected from reality. That's not even real. And it's in those moments where we just need to take a step back and just question our emotions. Hey, why do I feel this way? Hey, what's going on? Maybe we go to a trusted friend or our spouse and we allow them to filter our emotions. We just say, I feel this way. Can you just put some like brevity back in my mind? Like, can you give me some, what? Why am I? And maybe just have somebody that you trust to filter your emotions. The first piece of the prescription, when you're emotionally all over the place, it's just question them. But the second piece is this. The final dose is to relocate your hope. The final dose is to relocate your hope. It's said in this passage three times, hope thou in God. When I was a kid one year for Christmas, I really wanted a Kinect's Big Ball Factory. The Kinect's Big Ball Factory was 5 feet tall. Now, for me, when I was, I think I had, like most of my life, I was under 5 feet tall. But anyways, for me, 5 feet tall was like, it was huge. So I'd go to the stores and I would see this huge Kinect Big Ball Factory. By the way, did anybody play with Kinects when they were younger? Anybody? I know me and Luke did because we did that stuff together. I played with Kinects when I was a kid. And I think we put the Big Ball Factory together. But Christmas was coming, and if you were like me when you were a kid, or maybe you have been cursed with the fact that your kids were like me growing up, when Christmas came, I knew exactly what I wanted, and I was not shy to tell my parents exactly what I wanted on Christmas. And usually what I wanted was, I wanted so many things that I was living in a dream world. I would never get all those things, but I wanted a Kinect Big Ball Factory. I was hoping for that. I was praying for that. It's interesting. During Christmas time, when I was a kid, my prayer life increased so much. Like, I mean, my faith just grew. So I was praying so much. And I got the Big Ball Factory. I got it. It was awesome. And it was a box that must have been like this big. But it struck me when I got the Big Ball Factory that it didn't come together like it did when I saw it on TV or the commercials. I opened up the box and saw like a batrillion pieces, and then I was like, this isn't so awesome because I have to figure out how to put this whole thing together. But my hope was to get this big ball factory, and I did. The psalmist makes a declaration in chapters 42 and chapters 43. He says, I'm relocating my hope away from circumstances, away from people, and I'm relocating my hope to God. What do I mean by that? When we relocate our hope to God, we are directing our expectations for satisfaction, for meaning, and deliverance away from a circumstance, a position, or person, and to God. When we are hoping in God, because it's so easy, if you ask me any second of the day, any day of the year, Nate, do you hope in God? I'd say, of course I hope in God. But when I define hope like this, I don't know. What's hoping in God? It means I'm directing my expectations for satisfaction, for meaning and deliverance away from a circumstance, a position, or a person and to God. And hoping and trusting that God is going to, in His grace, that He can change circumstances and He can provide and He can meet needs and He can help in this situation. And the psalmist says, listen, I am now hoping in God. I'm not hoping in myself anymore. I'm not hoping in my emotions anymore. I'm not hoping in everybody else. I'm hoping in God. In verse number 6, I think it's chapter 43, he makes it personal. He says, he calls God my God. He doesn't say I'm hoping in a God. A lot of people believe in a God. That's within reason. Like, it's illogical to believe in a God. But the musician, the artist, the writer in Psalms, he says, he's my God. In other words, he's not some impersonal, distant deity that's the boss of the universe. No, 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 no. He is my God. He is mine. The psalmist says, I have decided I'm no longer hoping in everything, and I'm going to relocate my hope to the one who controls everything. Judah Smith says, an awareness of God's care is key to emotional sanity. An awareness of God's care is key to emotional sanity. When we're understanding that God is a personal God that personally cares for us and personally loves us, and we understand that God is caring for every part and every detail of our lives, Judah says, listen, that is key to having emotional sanity. One of the occupational hazards of being a pastor is that sometimes people want us to be their hope. People want us to fix their problems. People want us to change their circumstances, and people look to us and we can make them spiritual all of a sudden. Can't happen. We're just normal people with real struggles. And when people put their hope in us, or even another friend or a spouse or whoever, ultimately they're setting themselves up for disappointment, because our power is greatly limited as human beings. But when we relocate our hope to the one that really is in control, that is all powerful, that can change circumstances, that is when we discover what real hope is. In our closing 4 or 5 minutes we have together, I want to invite you to relocate your hope to God. And I want to tell you why you should. And I want to tell you, what is your life going to look like if you will relocate your hope away from circumstances, away from situations, and to God? Notice number one, quickly, is you won't be betrayed by your emotions. When you relocate your hope to God, you will not be betrayed by your emotions. This holiday season can be a discouraging time for some. The holidays can be difficult. Some are away from family. Some of us have had family members pass away that aren't going to be here. And it can be very difficult and very discouraging. And our emotions can take us to a place that's very low. And when things come in our lives and unpredictable things happen in our lives that we do not expect, we don't have to be betrayed by our emotions, but we can be strengthened by the hope that we have in God. Number two, you'll have you'll have better relationships. You'll have better relationships, but you will be easier to live with if your hope is in God. Because what will happen is I'm not expecting my spouse or somebody else to fulfill my deepest hopes and dreams and desires. I don't put the weight of my meaning and purpose and satisfaction onto that person. I don't have to expect them to do all these things. No. I take the expectations off of them because my hope is not for them to come through. My hope is for the God in heaven to come through. And relationally, when your hope is directed to God, it frees you up from putting expectations on people and allows those people to thrive. And we can love people unconditionally. Number three is if you'll relocate your hope to God, you'll thrive. You know, God in heaven wants you to thrive. Jesus came to give us, he uses the words abundant life. It's beautiful. God wants us to thrive. God doesn't want us to live lives where we're led by our emotions, where emotions, however our emotions are that day, that's how I'm living. I'm feeling good, so it's a great day, and I'm feeling bad, so it's a terrible day. No. Jesus wants you to thrive emotionally, spiritually, relationally. He came so we can have abundant life, so we can enjoy life. But we won't if we're led by our emotions. What do you do when emotions are going all over the place? What do you do when even guys that you say, I'm not emotional at all, when something happens at work that gets you upset and angry, when something happens and you're just beside yourself, what do? Take a step back. Question them. Why am I feeling this way? And then in that moment, after you question your emotions, make a decision to relocate your hope. Your satisfaction, your purpose is not going to be in that circumstance or that person or getting that whatever, but I'm relocating my hope to the God in heaven. I want to invite you this morning to relocate your hope. Let's have a word of prayer together. Lord, I ask you this morning.